Welcome to the Anthropology in Business podcast, where you'll learn about the many ways anthropology is applied in business and why business anthropology is one of the most effective lenses for making sense of organizations and consumers. Through conversations with leading anthropologists working in advertising, marketing, consumer behavior, organizational culture, user experience, and many other roles, you'll learn firsthand what it means to do business anthropology and how the work differs from academic anthropology. We'll discuss issues like the pace and depth of research in business, our visibility and influence as practitioners, and what we can do to build our brand. We will also focus on the value and impact of our research in business so that we can help business leaders understand why they should be hiring anthropologists. I'm your host, Matt Arts, a business anthropologist specializing in design anthropology and working at the intersection of product management, user experience, and business strategy. Let's get started. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Anthropology and Business podcast. I'm Matt Arts. I'm here today with Luis Van Jensen, partner and now co-CEO at Is It a Bird, a strategic innovation agency in Copenhagen, which really centers anthropology at the core of the practice. So, Luis, thanks for joining me today. Would you mind by telling everybody how you got interested in anthropology?
Sure, Matt. Thanks for having me. Such a pleasure. Well, actually, this is a kind of a funny anecdote. I pretty much looked up under the letter A and read about anthropology, didn't know a lot about it prior to that. And I have thought about that so many times ever since, how extremely lucky I was to stumble upon exactly that word. So lucky it didn't start with an E, because then I probably wouldn't have found it. And I have been enjoying being an anthropologist ever since. So when I started studying at the University of Copenhagen, I realized that it was actually a field of study that a lot of people had put quite some efforts into to getting to study, and I felt very privileged of being part of that group.
Great, thanks. So you just made the joke there that didn't start with E, but of course ethnography starts with E, and I don't want to jump ahead too much, but something maybe I want to come back to is, you know, the difference between, you know, an anthropology sort of focused approach to consulting versus just sort of ethnography. So I'm going to come back to that. But to stay with the education a bit, you know, I've spoke with some others who have gone to Copenhagen, and so I have an appreciation for, yeah, the sort of the period of time at which you were studying there. And, you know, while there were some threads of you know, application in business, it still wasn't the thrust of the program. So tell us a little bit about, you know, how you kind of came to this appreciation of applying anthropology in the way that you do.
And I think at the time when I was studying, and that's now around 15 years ago, it was very much not the case that you were prompted to go into business while studying. I remember a few companies coming to pitch their cases where they wanted anthropology students to join them in trying to understand human behavior in one area or another. And we were kind of laughing at them because it was very much perceived. I don't know if you could call it the dark side, but I think a lot of us had the intention of going into the third sector and applying our skills in that area. However, that's changed quite a lot since, luckily, and the understanding of the value of understanding human behavior and motivations and thoughts and the whole philosophical way of looking at the world that the anthropologists can apply is really relevant in all types of contexts. So I'm really glad that that shift has happened and has rooted itself also at the Institute of Anthropology in Copenhagen. But what got me in that direction was very much actually first after I finalized my studies. So I think I allowed myself to be very nerdy in terms of methodology and really deep diving whenever possible while studying. And when you study in Copenhagen, you get to for instance, go off on a half-year fieldwork prior to your master thesis. And I very deliberately did not go into a very corporate setting there because I wanted to practice my skill set in a very in a non-corporate setting, maybe already there, kind of knowing that at some point I would apply it into a more corporate world, but then having tried it out in a more condensed format first.
And so what did you end up studying with that?
Yeah, well, I went to Berlin. I wanted to also practice my German skills, I have to say. And I went into a social community in Berlin of young people, quite left-wingish, politically speaking, and investigating how they identified as young Germans in a city like Berlin, in a country with the history that Germany has, and how the uncomfortable self-perception of being German actually lived on quite many years after both the divided country and also of course the whole Second World War background, and how present that was to those young people. I found that interesting because in many regards, to those of you who know that Denmark and Germany have quite close affiliation, and it was interesting for me as a young person myself to explore how similar we were in some regards and then how utterly different we positioned ourselves in the world. So that was my nerdy project back then.
And so then from there, how did you make your way to business?
When I finished my studies, it was at that point in time, there weren't a lot of, it wasn't like there was a list of anthropological consultancies out there that I could apply for. So I was recommended by a friend to look for companies that, and now we're getting back to that distinction maybe between ethnography and anthropology, looking for companies who would kind of position themselves in a field where they would apply some of the methodology or at least speak the lingo, but not having real anthropologists out there. So I approached quite a list of agencies suggesting them that maybe they needed the real deal. Maybe they needed a real anthropologist to lift the authenticity of what they were promising their clients that they could do. And that worked out well.
And what percentage actually perceived that or accepted that sort of challenge? You know, was it well received or?
Yeah, I remember I had a actually quite structured process of sitting over the course of a few weeks looking for agencies. Obviously, when you just step out of the university, you don't necessarily know a lot about the world outside. And so I would listed up at least 10 agencies, and then I wrote to them all at once, bulleting out what I could offer. And then saying that I would reach out to them after a week if I hadn't heard back. And I remember that I got to go to coffee meetings with 3 out of the 10, I think, which is a fairly okay hit rate. And and that was then eventually one of them where I ended up. And that was Is It a Bird already back then, which at the time was a company founded by a sociologist, and where a designer had joined her, and where they were very much speaking to the methodology of anthropology, and they didn't have a website yet. We met up in a cafe in Copenhagen. They didn't have an office. And I was basically told that they didn't have a project for me, but that if I was able to sell this project that they had just received a brief on, then I would be able to step into the company.
Well, and obviously that happened.
That happened. We sold the project, and it was actually from the very get-go, the beginning of a lot of years of taking the liberty to be creative around what our methodology can do and how it can create value. I remember back then it was a study for the municipality of Copenhagen who wanted to explore how cyclists in Copenhagen navigate, and we were discussing. I remember in that cafe, how do you conduct participant observation and facilitate meaningful conversations with people who are biking? There are some very limiting factors to being with them on the bike lane, and can you actually do that? And so what we ended up doing was kind of an early stage mobile ethnography in a more analog format, where we asked people to report back in logbooks and do all kinds of stuff that would help them remember concrete experiences and be descriptive in our conversations about how they navigate, because that's the challenge you have, right? That if you are too far away from the context, you get these idealized pictures of reality that you can't really use. So you wanted the thick descriptions. So we were trying to be creative about how to get people to give us the thick descriptions of their reality.
So I want to come back to that and, you know, the overall process of, is it a bird, and even talk about maybe how it's evolved over time. But just real quick, so tell me about how you came up with the name for Is It a Bird?
Well, I can't take credit for it. That was the founder, Line Gros, who came up with a name. But however, there's a really good story to it. So I can maybe even ask you what you think the reference is.
That's tough, putting the question back on me. I haven't actually thought about it. But maybe because it's something like, you know, there's almost like a shadow that you can't quite identify or can't quite make sense of.
You're getting at it. So it's a reference to Superman, just like you guessed, I guess. And what you have in the comics is people standing on the street looking up into the sky. They're seeing a phenomenon in the sky that they don't immediately understand. So what you do when you see something emerging that you don't understand, well, you start asking questions. And you start with the language you have already. So they start with, is it a bird? Is it a plane? No, it's Superman. So when something new is emerging, our philosophy is that the smartest way to approach it is to ask questions and to be curious and to be open about not knowing rather than trying to be experts in what is coming. In our philosophy, innovation doesn't start with an idea. It starts with a really good question.
What does practicing, you know, in, say, the greater, you know, Copenhagen region really look like? You know, are you mostly working with private organizations? You know, is there a fair amount of government work? What does that landscape look like?
It's evolved over the years. So now I've been with Is It a Bird for plus 10 years. And when we started out, it was mainly public sector, mainly Danish clients. And then at some point, we realized that if we wanted to be ambitious with being allowed to be creative with our anthropological craft, we needed to go outside the borders of Denmark and we needed to go into a more commercial space, where private companies and organizations had a different budgets also to enable us to do what we do best. So in the latter years, I think a proportion has been 70% projects that are either big Danish companies that are operating globally, and then a 30% part of our projects are still based in Denmark and based in the public sphere. So what it has allowed us a lot to operate more globally and to also be allowed to, for example, do comparable studies across different countries and look at what are cultural differences. And I think in a time where I remember having a dialogue with a client once in a big organization who said, she was in a marketing team somewhere saying, it's not so much about culture anymore, it's more about personalities. And I thought that was such an odd thing to say. And it makes me happy when we get to do insight studies and in strategic in sparring with our clients where we get to work across countries, because then we can really show how big a role culture plays in the way humans act and think. So it's given us a huge playground, so to speak, to apply and develop our methodologies.
So then maybe using that as a jumping off point. So you just kind of explained the evolution of the client base a bit, but tell us maybe, you know, how you've matured the practice over all of these years. Of course, for many, at least when they're starting out, right, maybe they don't get to sell everything they want to do and they have to sort of prove themselves. And over time, they get to do more, plus they learn more and they start incorporating. So, you know, where'd you start all those years ago and kind of how's that changed from today?
I think there's been a few major shifts which have mostly been in our self-perception. So one of those being is the value of what we apply in our projects. Is it the methods or the mindset? And when we started out, we were very much focused on the methodologies. And I realized that's also the language I use here. But I really see the value of what we apply being the mindset. And when you make that shift, you also allow yourself a lot more creative freedom to figure out. So basically, an anthropologist, the value of anthropology in the methodology of fieldwork is sharing time and space with people, enabling us to reflect upon what we see and what we hear and start a dialogue from there. Understanding the lived experience in some context and sharing that with the stakeholders who wants to hear it. So when you look at it from that perspective, methodologies can be so many things. And the way you gather that type of data is a lot more of a creative task than some strict formula you apply. That's been a big shift in our approach, and I think it has helped us leverage the perceived value of what we do in our client collaborations. And then I think that international ambition we've had has enabled us to stay nerdy, because if we were to stay in Denmark, I think we would have to be a more full service kind of agency. But the more global reach has allowed us to stay within the space where I like to think of ourselves, in the intersection between social science, design, and strategy, and be very qualitatively funded, and then with the ability to partner up with other types of nerds whenever we need that. But the global reach, also enabled by not least the latter years, more digital ways of communicating with companies and clients and collaborators, that has allowed us to stay true to a core that's quite narrow.
Interesting. And so just back to the myth, the pivot from method to mindset, was it also the case that even the way you positioned yourself, say back in the day, like when you did get a website, and then even I guess in how the services you were selling, did you also, was it a pivot in that as well?
Exactly. And throughout the whole value chain, actually, I think when we draft proposals, we're super aware of not drowning in process. And I think that's also another skill that you are trained to be trained as an anthropologist to shift your focus from the how to the why, where you so easily end up in the how, especially when you're given a task where a client might be very focused on a how, right? They might come to you with a brief that is bulleting out a time plan, an activity plan, and a deliverable plan. But what you need to be able to constantly do is take a step back from that and say, why is this what they're asking? What is the current level of knowledge that makes them ask these questions? Might there be better questions that we could challenge them with that is tapping into that why were we doing it in the first place? And what's the value we want to create, rather than the process of how we will get from A to B? So that's connected to that distinction between methodology and mindset. Because if you're in process mode and methodology mode, then you can lose sight of why you're doing things in the first place. And that's maybe tapping into a second sort of pivot moment we've had. It's been, and that's very much one that I'm also exploring at the moment, that shifting your self-perception from data collector to trusted advisor. So shifting away from being somebody who designs a deliverable, hands it over to somebody who does smart strategic thinking based on what you do, to actually insist on building a relationship where you are the trusted advisor. And I think that's something I at least was not taught enough at the university, that we as anthropologists, we love to state all the complexities, but if we don't take responsibility for ensuring guidance out of the complexities, then somebody else will do it. And they will most likely forget half the insights that we own at that point, right? So daring and being bold enough to say, I am actually a consultant. And I am probably a more insightful consultant than the neighbor who is a more classical management consultant, right?
Yeah, great. And, you know, so I think all the past few minutes and all those tips, I think are particularly helpful for individuals who are starting out, because often when you do see anthropologists start, you know, put up their shingle, it is often very, you know, I sell ethnography or I do it, right? I do this, and this, and versus the bigger picture. So I'm glad you framed it all in that way. Now, I guess one question I have coming back to the Danish context, how have you seen it change in the sense of, were people asking for anthropology, you know, at all back then? Or I guess even are they asking for it now? Or are they still coming with, you know, we have a problem, and then you're responding, well, we have this mindset?
There's definitely a shift happening, and a very interesting one. And I think sometimes we laugh a little about that we have the sense that we've been standing still. Of course, we haven't been standing still for 10 years. I just explained the evolution of it all. But in some instances, it feels like we've been standing still, and the world around us has been moving, and now we're meeting up. so when we started out, I remember one politician in Denmark had at one point said that we need more anthropologists, and that was like a woo. That was a public figure putting a name on anthropology, but other than that. That was a nerdy field you could go into if you wanted to become a scientist of some sort. But now you can say that you're an anthropologist, and it will be, people will sort of know what that means. And you can step into a business context, and they will, maybe they won't have asked for it, but they will recognize and acknowledge that that could be an approach to solve a problem. And actually, maybe that's taking me to a point that is quite dear to me at the moment, which is I think we've matured as a discipline in the business world to an extent where I could dream of a somewhat near future where when you ask an economist of their perception of something, that it's then also natural to ask, for example, an anthropologist. So it's not something that's a meta out of place. That's either something very special that's our go-to discipline when something is super wicked and we don't understand it, or something that we just don't understand and therefore don't go to. But it's one perspective out of many, and one that is just a legit and a perspective to apply to understand some context, as for instance the economist's take on numbers on some kind of issue, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, just one more follow-up question on the Danish context. So, you know, in the States you rarely see an anthropologist as a talking head in any kind of media, right? They just, yeah, there's plenty of economists for other problems. There's, you know, lots of psychologists and you name it, right? Other sort of disciplines. And do you ever see anthropologists in the media there?
That would maybe be stretching it. I would love to see it. I think, however, that in the Scandinavian countries, the social anthropology in Scandinavia is quite well established. But no, it's not. Sometimes you would see in sort of the late news, you would see an anthropologist in the studio making a comment about some issue, not a business issue, however, that would then be different types of issues, but it happens.
We need to make it happen more, so bringing back to Zetterberg, so I want to talk strategy. So I do ask the question a lot, you know, people will bring up the word strategy and I ask kind of what they mean by it, but How do you all think about strategy?
So obviously, when you think of Zetterberg, think of a triangle where in the one corner you have social science, mainly anthropology. In the other part of the, in the other corner you have design, which is design thinking, and also the whole iterative approach to understanding not only what problems to solve, but also how to solve them, right? And then in the third corner, we have strategy. And to start out with, Is It a Bird was very much combining the complementary powers of anthropology and design. But as we did that, we very much realized that that held a big strategic potential. Because some problems you will approach solely with a design approach, and that can easily become, going back to that distinction between the why and the how, that can very easily become a very processual way of looking at a problem. Whereas the philosophical nature of anthropology invites for more reflection time and for the slow pace, whereas the design, a lot of the design tools offers a very fast pace, right? So the combination of the slow and the fast and the reflective and the experimental and the explorative nature and the tangible nature, the combination of these two complementary skills is what holds such great strategic potential, because a great strategy has to offer a vision, but it also has to have some tangible components. So by applying the two other skills, we can sort of answer the questions informing a great strategic approach to something. And it was kind of, I wouldn't say it was a coincidence, but it's matured over the years how we approach strategy as a company, where I think we have a strong position because we insist that strategy should always be informed by a curiosity towards the world out there. And it can never be something that is defined and designed by people in a boardroom who decide on a vision for something on their own. And I think that's a strong position to hold. So that is, I think, strategy to us. Putting it in a bit of a popular phrase, maybe I would say that you think of strategy as a matter of looking ahead. We think of it as a matter of looking around in order to look ahead.
Good. And so tell me, you know, we've talked a little bit about the evolution, but that evolution, of course, can never stop. And so, you know, what's really interesting you all right now? You know, where are you reading, or what are you thinking of, you know, for future directions yourselves?
Well, as mentioned a little bit before, I'm very much exploring what is the potential of the anthropological consultant, of daring to step more into that trusted advisor role, of stepping a little bit further away from the agency self-perception into that bridge maker, or that advisory role where it's not taking one step maybe away from the data points in the ethnographic material that we work from, and daring to apply the anthropological thinking more, and use that part of our training in dialogues in some of the big client organizations that we collaborate with. I have to say that 2 years ago, we were partly acquired by a management consultancy that's also founded and based in Copenhagen, but now also operating with offices all around the globe, and they're called Implement Consulting Group. And we have we still have our own brand, and we're sitting in our own offices, but we have, by that part acquisition, been offered a big network of potential collaborators in a lot of skills, people who often hold a big industry knowledge about something, or who are these trusted advisors to the clients, and who conduct more traditional consultancy services than we have traditionally done. And that's giving me an interesting outside-in perspective to what we've done for 10 years, and also seeing seeing new areas where it's relevant to apply anthropology that I might have been blind to previously. So for starters, exploring how can we apply our lens a lot more on the inside of organizations than always being, we've traditionally come from being the ones who tell client organizations how their consumers or citizens or patients think about something. But how can we apply business empathy even more to ensure impact of what we bring?
I know you've already given a few recommendations throughout that I think anybody who maybe wants to start their own practice could use. But, you know, is there anything, you know, that you've learned through the years, any bruised knees that like haven't come up yet that you would want to share that might help others do something similar?
I think I'm a big fan of Donna Haraway. And I think this is maybe a quote that's a little too applicable to many, many situations, but her point about staying in the trouble very much applies for what we do. And there is it's uncomfortable to stay in the trouble. Nonetheless, I think the value of what we do as anthropologists in business is that we are the ones who dare to stay with the friction a little longer and dare to stay with the trouble in that sense that where there's friction, there is potential and there is potential for transformation. And I think we have the skills to uncover those frictions and facilitate others in having better conversations with one another while not stepping away from the friction, if that makes sense. Because I think so I would encourage those who want to start on their own to not be too demotivated in those client interactions where friction occurs, because that's the name of the game. And I think if you are experiencing, of course, you can also just have really bad chemistry, but I think in many instances, friction is the fuel of what we do. So if you're pointing at an uncomfortable truth towards a client, I think there's something in it that's valuable to hold on to. So so try to not give in to be pleasing, but try to take that challenger position and see what that brings once the stakeholders that you meet with that potentially uncomfortable truth, once it sits with them for a little while, most likely they will come back and say, I think you were right.
Wonderful. Well, I think that's a good way to wrap up. And if anybody wanted to get in touch with you,
then you are very welcome to reach out to me via my LinkedIn profile, or you can also go and have a look at Isidbert's website, isidbert.dk.
Well, Louise, thanks for coming on.
A pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Anthropology in Business podcast. To learn everything you need to break into business anthropology and why business anthropology is one of the best lenses for contributing to business success, visit my website at madarts.me, where I cover many topics related to business anthropology and beyond. There you will find all the podcast episodes, blogs, and news. Please like, share, and subscribe. See you next time.